knocking in the kitchen. Every inch of me goes rigid, including my neck, which suddenly throbs with pain. Damn it. Why won't that goddamn kink go away? I asked the team trainer to work on it after last practice, but it's still sore as hell.
What did you hear?
Not much, she admits, but enough to put a few of the pieces together. She, got pregnant, huh? When you two were together?
I clench my teeth.
And then she lost the baby? Jess's tone softens with sympathy. She reaches for my hand and squeezes it gently. I'm sorry. I can't even begin to imagine what you two went through. Another choked laugh flies out, making her eyes widen in alarm. Then they turn to thunderclouds. You think it's funny? She releases my hand and stares at me in disapproval. What the hell is the matter with you?
Jess.
I clear my throat a couple of times.
Look, I appreciate your concern and the sympathy. I know it's coming from a good place, but trust me, it's misguided.
Misguided? She echoes. Your ex-girlfriend lost your baby and my sympathy is misguided?
There was no baby, I shout.
She freezes. Silence falls between us. A long, tense silence during which I want to smack myself for opening my big mouth. Fucking hell. Why'd I have to go and say that?
Maybe she didn't hear?
Yeah, dumbass. She didn't hear the Godzilla roar that just rocked the hum-hum. What do you mean there wasn't a baby? Confusion etches her pretty features. But I heard your sister say that your baby would have been 4 next month, and how Brenna's kid and Molly's kid would have been cousins. I swear I didn't mishear that, Blake.
I exhale slowly. You heard right, okay? But you heard wrong.
Is that a riddle? She sounds exasperated. I don't understand. Why would... Jess gasps so loudly that I actually jump in my seat. Oh my God, she's lying to your family?
Can we please drop this?
I lean over and tap the steering wheel.
Just drive us home already.
Jess isn't listening to me. She looks aghast, biting her bottom lip as she studies my face. Why does your family think you and your ex were going to have a baby?
You're really not going to let this go?
No. I clench my fists against my knees.
They think it because that's what Molly told them. Because that's what she told me.
The start of my rookie year in the pros, she told me she was pregnant. I fix my gaze at the windshield.
And she lied, okay? She wasn't preggers, but she said she was 3 months along. And you know, that's when you're allowed to start shouting it from the rooftops. So I told my family right after I found out. Mal and I were engaged at that point, so they were as thrilled as I was.
You were engaged? Jess blurts out.
Had a date set and everything.
I snort.
But I guess that wasn't enough of a commitment, not to her.
I don't get it.
Not much to get, I mutter. She didn't like all the attention I was getting from other broads. You know how it is, hockey players are gods. It's like a buffet of hot girls. Not that I ever sampled the buffet.
I swallowed down a wave of bitterness.
I'm not a fucking cheater.
Jess wrinkles her forehead. Did Molly think you were cheating?
She was scared I would. Didn't matter how many times I reassured her, she didn't believe I'd keep my dick in my pants. We were getting married for fuck's sake, but nope, she still couldn't trust that I'd stick around.
I fight my rising anger.
So she came up with a way that I'd have to stick around.
I stop abruptly. Pissed at myself for laying all this shit at Jess's feet. It's ancient history, and there's no reason to dredge it all up. Molly and I aren't together anymore, so what if I still see her around sometimes? So what if I've told my family a lie or two? As long as I don't think about it too hard, it can't make me angry. When did you find out she wasn't pregnant?
She said she had a sonogram appointment. I was supposed to be on the road, but a snowstorm in Vancouver meant our flight couldn't take off, so I surprised her at the doctor's office.
And she wasn't there? Jess guesses.
Oh, she was.
I can still picture the freaked out look on her face when I walked into that waiting room. But there was no sonogram, because there was no pregnancy. She'd made an appointment to ask her gynecologist for fertility meds.
Jess gasped.
She's infertile?
No idea. I throw my arms up. All I know is that she was trying to make her lie into a reality. As soon as she started sputtering excuses, I knew what had happened. I'd gotten a weird vibe off her when she said she wanted to stop rapping the weasel.
Rapping?
Oh. Jess rolls her eyes. She pulled the goalie. 5 years later, I still almost can't believe it. Who does that?
Who does that?
Jess asks.
Someone who's willing to lie to me.
So what did you do? How could you not dump her on the spot?
Because she's... was... family. Molly and I didn't get together until freshman year of college, but I knew her before that. She's Brenna's best friend. They were inseparable in high school, and she was always over at our place. I blow out of breath. My whole family loves her.
Would they still love her if they knew what she did?
I don't know, I admit. But just because she hurt me didn't mean I wanted to tar and feather her or cost her a lifelong friendship with Bren, so... Yeah, I ended it. But she begged me not to tell my family about what she'd done. She told them she had a miscarriage, and then a couple of months later we broke up. I use finger quotes. And told everyone that our relationship couldn't survive the emotional trauma. But we were donezo the day I learned the truth. Jess is visibly horrified.
Blake, that's insane. Why wouldn't you set your family straight? Now they all view her as some innocent victim who got dumped by her fiancé after she miscarried their baby.
What else was I supposed to do?
I counter.
Embarrass her? Make Brenna, her best friend, hate her? I was trying to protect her.
She doesn't deserve that, Jess screeches. Then she takes a calming breath. Jesus, Blake, you're either a saint or the biggest idiot on the planet.
I finally crack a smile.
Babe.
What?
You just said Jesus.
She looks flustered. I did not.
Yeah, you did.
Agree to disagree.
She shakes her head at me.
I can't believe that happened to you. Fake pregnancy? A web of lies? That's soap opera shit right there, dude.
Tell me about it.
I can't believe I just unloaded all of that on her. Then again, Jess is studying to be a nurse.
Maybe she doesn't mind wading into other people's shitstorms.
We go quiet for a beat. Jess turns the key in my macho mobile.
You totally said Jesus, I mutter under my breath.
Did not, she scoffs.
Did so?
Did not. She looks over her shoulder to check for traffic and then pulls out and guns it. I stop arguing because I'm too busy watching a pretty girl drive my truck. At least one thing went right today. In a pretty blue dress that shows off her curves, Jess Canning handled my nutty family like a champ. If I was ever going to trust a woman again, she'd be the top seed of the tournament.
We stand on guard for thee, Jess. The next 2 weeks of my life are crazy. I pass all my anatomy quizzes by never leaving the library except for classes and to sleep. Clinical observation work continues too, and lately we're visiting a geriatric home. They taught us to take vital signs, so now we even touch the patients sometimes. The cases there can be sad, but not kids with cancer sad. My friend Dyson works with geriatric patients, and when we chatted on the phone, he gave me a tip.
Sing Ella Fitzgerald, he said.
What?
Learn some Ella tunes and sing one if the patient isn't cooperating. Trust me. And your voice doesn't even suck.
That wasn't exactly high praise, but just in case he was onto something, I memorized the lyrics too. They can't take that away from me. A week later, I called Dyson back to tell him he's a genius.
Well, obvs, he said. But what did I do this time?
When I sing Ella, the oldsters will let me do anything. Came in handy on my first blood draw.
Oh, honey, I'm sure that went smoothly, he giggled.
The poor man gritted his dentures, I confessed. But when I sang about the way he wore his hat, he relaxed.
Good girl. And this shit takes practice. You'll be finding them veins in no time.
I hoped so. Even a couple of months in, I still wake up every morning with the feeling that I'm holding on by the skin of my teeth. My schedule is so crazy that I barely seen my brother or Wes. Their schedules are nutty, too, now that their hockey seasons have really begun. But tonight, finally, I'm going to see Wes's game with Jamie, who has a pair of comped season tickets. I missed the first one he invited me to because Violet convinced me that it would be a sacrilege to miss an evening lecture about medical ethics. I deserve a night out, damn it. So, even though I have a paper to write this week, I meet Jamie at the stadium and follow him toward his seats.
"We're only a few rows up from the penalty box," he says, pointing to two open seats in row E.
My feet freeze on the staircase, though, because I see Mama Riley sitting in the third seat in. At 6 feet and change, even from the back she's easy to spot.
"What's the matter?"
Jamie asks, waiting for me. Shit. I haven't spoken to Blake since the world's most stressful baby shower. He hasn't called or texted, and he didn't turn up either of the nights I visited my brother. He might even be avoiding me. "Let's get some food first," I say quickly. "There's something I have to tell you." He gives me his version of an irritated look, a flicker of disapproval, and then a relaxed shrug. I drag him back into the crowds and into line at a mac and cheese stand that calls to me. "Okay, this is going to sound crazy."
"Yeah?"
Jamie is reading the menu, unconcerned. "A couple of weeks ago, I was Blake Riley's date for a thing."
"A thing?"
"A family party." It's the kind of story I would have told Jamie for giggles, except that Blake's reason for needing a date was so awful, I ended up keeping it to myself. "It's a long story, but he told his family we're dating." Jamie snorts.
"You and Blake Riley?"
"I know, right?" My laughter has a tinge of hysteria in it. "It was a favor. He was supposed to tell his mom that we broke up later, but I don't know if he did yet." Jamie turns to me with laughing brown eyes.
"So the Rileys think you're either his girlfriend or his ex, but you don't know which."
"Right."
"Well, this will be entertaining."
It's our turn, so Jamie steps up to the counter and orders mac and cheese with pulled pork for both of us, along with two beers. I pull out my wallet, but my little brother waves off my 20.
"My treat."
He and Wes are always treating me, damn it. This whole year is all about regressing. Back in the dorms again. Back to being broke. Fun times.
"You know,"
Jamie hands me our beers.
"If you're smart, you'll string this fake relationship out another week."
"God, why?"
"There's a benefit thing. It's black tie, which blows. But Hozier is playing."
The beer bottle stops halfway to my mouth. "Hozier is playing? Like live?"
"Like, yeah,"
he snickers.
"For 300 guests at $1,000 a pop. All the players get a plus one."
"Can I go with Wes?"
"No fucking way,"
Jamie retorts, lifting the tray off the counter.
"I'm going with Wes. It'll be the first big charity thing I attend with him. Didn't I choose well?"
"But I like Hozier more than you do."
"Says who?"
"Maybe Blake would bring me as payback." Except he doesn't owe me any favors now. Damn it. My life is short on fun right now, and it's definitely short on $1,000 concert tickets. I freaking love Hozier, though.
"You get the inside seat,"
Jamie says, as we descend again toward row E.
"What?
No," he chuckles.
"Just save my eardrums this one time."
Reluctantly, I take my seat next to Mama Riley. "Hi there," I say with false cheer. Her dark eyebrows lift in surprise.
"Jessica!"
My God, she's loud. "How have you been? Lovely party you threw. I'm still thinking about that brisket." She beams.
"Thank you. How come you're sitting here?"
Uh-oh. Does that mean Blake and I broke up? "Well, sorry. These are Jamie's seats." She slaps me on the back with a hand that's shockingly large for a woman's.
"Thought you'd be in the WAGS box. Both of you." "These are great seats,"
Jamie says, helping me out. His smile is pure amusement.
"The WAGS box is fun too, though. But I'm always hungover the morning after hanging out in there. Right, Jess?"
I don't even know what the WAGS box is. Luckily, the game is starting. We all rise to sing O Canada, which I really don't know. But that's okay because Mama Riley belts it loud enough for all of us. I'm approaching deafness by the last
We stand on guard for thee.
When I turn to my brother for a shared glance, something blue catches my eye. In his ear. Jamie is wearing one of those disposable earplugs. Oh my God, where did you get that? Hmm? He asks, passing me my dinner. The starting lineup is announced, and when Blake's name booms from the loudspeaker, Mama Riley cheers so loudly that I almost spill my beer. Then the game starts, and the action is right in front of us. I've never seen an NHL game before, since I'm more of a football fan. But our seats are great, and the fast-moving game is addictive. Blake is pretty incredible, too. He's not as fast and slippery as Wes, but he's just so forceful out there. I can't even imagine what it would feel like to look up at 250 pounds of Blake Riley charging you for the puck. I have an inappropriate shimmy near my goal crease. Just thinking about it. If I'm honest, Wes is on a team full of startlingly attractive players. Besides Blake, there's Erickson, who I wouldn't kick out of bed. And of course, there's the pretty boy, Will O'Connor. Naturally, Jamie and I cheer for Wes and Blake every time they get their sticks on the puck. But our enthusiasm is nothing compared to Mama Riley's. Whenever her son sets foot on the ice, she lets fly a litany of violent encouragement.
Get him, Blakey! Bend his fenders! Sink his battleship!
I nudge Jamie. What does that mean? He shakes his head, smiling.
I tune it out.
It looks like the first period will be scoreless. But when there's only 50 seconds on the clock, both Blake and Wes vault over the wall for one more press. Right before the buzzer, Blake makes a risky pass to Wes, who snaps it right back to him. If I'd blinked, I'd have missed the whole exchange. Someone on the other team must have blinked, because Blake fires that puppy into the net at top speed. The lamp lights, and the hometown crowd is on its feet, and we are all thrilled in row E. I'm shrieking when Mama Riley picks me up clear off the floor, crushing me against her giant bosom and yelling,
"Good boy, Blakey! Mama loves you!"
The announcer calls the goal for Blake and the assist for Wes. The intermission begins while I try to catch my breath. Seriously, I need to come to more of these. Cheering for my friends beats the snot out of cramming for another anatomy quiz.
So, Jessica, Mama Riley starts.
Hmm? I'm sipping my beer and watching them set up for an intermission game down on the ice. It has something to do with t-shirt cannons and giant bullseyes.
I hope you're on some sort of birth control. The beer goes down the wrong pipe. I gag, my throat constricting. Then the hacking starts. I'm dying here, and Blake's mom is still talking. There are more options for a girl your age, she says. Better pills and IUDs. No reason not to be careful.
I sputter. Beside me, I can feel Jamie's laughter without even having to look.
A nursing student, I finally manage. I have, lots of information about all of that.
Good, she says firmly. Blake doesn't need any distractions. Women have toyed with him before.
Even in my haze of embarrassment, this statement hits me a little wrong. I lock eyes with Mama Riley, and her expression is fierce. Maybe she's the type to assume that every girl is a gold digger, but I think not. Blake didn't tell his family what happened, but mothers are damned intuitive. I think she knows. Jess.
Mayday! Hope you see this before you see your mom. I sat next to her, and let's just say a body cavity search would have been less probing.
Jess. Also nice goal. Blake.
Shitballs. I'm sorry. Forgot J-Bomb's seats were next to Mom. Ugh, ugh, ugh.
Jess. Felt like a jerk lying to her. Frowny face. Blake.
I hate liars. And now I made you into one. My ex has got me all tipsy-topsy.
Jess. Topsy-turvy. Blake.
Whatever.
Jess. So, wouldn't now be a good time to ask you if you need a plus one for Hosier? Hashtag, please say yes. Hashtag, I lied to your mom for you. Blake,
Wait, is this a shakedown?
Jess. No, because I'm being really honest here about how deep in love I am with Hosier.
Blake. Fine, lady. But wear something sexy.
Jess. Really? I can go?
Blake. Yeah, it's cool. Gotta go. I can hear Mom out in the hallway bellowing for me.
Jess. Bye. You're the best friend in the whole world. I owe you.
Blake. Uh-huh. We'll talk payment later. T-T-Y-T-O-T-N-D-O-W.
Jess. Question mark?
Blake. Talk to you tomorrow or the next day or whenever.
Friends at Benefits. Blake. Houston, we have uno problemo. No, not just uno problemo. We have whatever the Spanish word is for disaster. And it's me. I'm the disaster. I've been a disaster for 2 weeks and nobody has even noticed. Well, in their defense, they haven't noticed because I've kept my mouth shut about it. Because what man goes around telling everyone that he's a disaster? That wasn't supposed to happen. Not to me. I'm a big, tough hockey player who always knows what to do. And I liked my life just the way it was, fuck you very much. Playing pro hockey comes with a ton of perks. Babes. Free shit. Babes. Adoring fans. Oh, and babes. In fact, any chick would be fawning all over me right now, whipping her panties off and whispering in my ear all the filthy things she'll do to me later for bringing her to such a cool-ass event. Any chick, but Jess Canning, that is. She's my problem, and I can hardly even form the words in my mind, they're so awful. I'm falling for her. But does she notice? No, no, and no. My date is too busy fawning over the Irish chump on the stage. That accent, Jess gushes, her brown eyes glued to the singer. Oh my God, I'd listen to him recite the phone book for 3 days straight if it meant hearing that accent broguing in my ear. Broguing isn't a real word, I grumble. She snickers. Hey, Pot, I'm Kettle. Half your vocabulary is made up, Blakey. Now shh, I'm trying to listen. But she's the one who started talking in the first place. I swallow a growl and force myself to tune in to Hosier's set. He's got this whole acoustic setup going on, nice and intimate, and I might actually be enjoying it if Jess wasn't eye-fucking the guy. How much does this dude weigh anyway? A buck 70? 80? Everyone knows you're not a real man unless you weigh over 200. I watch Jess as she watches the show. She took my suggestion and wore something sexy tonight. A tight black dress that hugs her perfect tits and stops about mid-thigh. When she stood on her tiptoes earlier to hug Erickson, the silky fabric rode so high I could see the swell of her ass cheeks. And she did something seriously fuckable to her hair. It's big and trashy in a good way. I want to shove my fingers through it, angle her head back and kiss her until she's breathless. And then buy her some dinner. Yep, dinner. I don't just want to fuck this girl, I want to feed her. I want to take her out to some fancy French place, maybe order chocolate-covered strawberries and sensually rub them on her lips, all Don Juan style. Seriously, something's wrong with me. It's been wrong ever since I dropped her at home after the baby shower and almost blurted out, "Can I take you to a French place and feed you strawberries?" Thank fuck I reined in the crazy. "Encore!" the crowd shouts. I think Erickson might be leading the chant. I turn toward him. Yeah, he is. Never knew the Swedes had such a hard-on for the Irish. Were they allies during the war?
What war? Jess asks in confusion.
I said that aloud?
Sweden and Ireland, I answer. Were they allies in WW1 and or 2?
She stares at me.
You realize the W's are just for writing purposes, right? To make it short form? Saying them out loud makes the word longer.
You make the word longer, I mutter.
Jess frowns.
What's up with you tonight? You've been cranky since the moment we got here.
Guilty as charged. I'm Mr. Cranky Pants. I just spent 2 weeks going out of my way to avoid this woman, and it did nothing to fix the problem. Isn't time supposed to be the answer to everything? Give it enough time, and whatever stupid feelings you're having will eventually fade. Anger? A good night's sleep always cures it. Sadness? A night at a bar with friends always does the trick. I think I might really like Jessica Canning. It'll pass. Except it hasn't passed. Seeing her tonight only opened up the floodgates again. I didn't have enough to eat. I lie. You ate steak, lobster, and about a million hors d'oeuvres, not to mention half my dinner. Then maybe I'm thirsty, I say flippantly. I'm hitting the bar. Want anything? No, I'm good. Her gaze shifts back to the stage where Hozier is getting ready to play his encore. I leave Jess in the crowd and make my way to the bar, where I find Will O'Connor chatting up three skinny blondes with huge bazingas. One of them has her hand on his hip, while another runs her palm up and down his arm. The newbie is loving the attention. Riley, he greets me with a big grin. Enjoying the party? I grunt, then ask the bartender for a whiskey neat. What's the matter? O'Connor mocks. Westmead's sis won't put out? We're just friends, I answer. And don't say that shit around Wesley or he'll kick your ass. O'Connor rolls his eyes and turns back to his companions. I take my drink and wander off, but not back toward the stage area. Instead, I find a solitary corner and lean against the wall, sipping my drink. The ballroom is decorated in the same elegant style as every other charity fundraiser I've attended, only this one is for a dog rescue. So the pink wall hangings are covered with glittery silver paw prints, and the dessert I scarfed down and the nameplates on the table were also paw-shaped. I study the crowd. Jess is standing with Wes and J-Bomb, laughing at something her brother whispered to her. Then they cheer their lungs out as Hozier starts singing. Jess moves seductively to the music, her hips swaying and blonde head bopping. Man, she's pretty and smart and funny and about a million other things I can't put into words. My mom called the other day and asked how the relationship was going. She even said to tell Jess hello for her, which, when it comes to mom, is the equivalent of her giving the relationship her blessing. Usually the R word makes me break out in hives. I've been a bachelor for 5 years and have no intention of changing up the status. Don't get me wrong, I don't think all women are lying, untrustworthy assholes. But why take the chance, you know? Better to keep shit casual, keep it about the fucking, and forget about the trusting. There you are. A breathless, flushed Jess flies up to me, her high heels clacking against the marble floor. You missed the encore. I'll watch it on YouTube later. You're such a downer tonight. She tugs the drink out of my hand, takes a sip, and then places the glass back in my hand. Come on, party pooper. It's time for the speech. I follow her back to our table. The event organizers seated us with Wes, Jamie, and a few of my other teammates, and their wags. Erickson is the only solo gent at the table, and he slides closer to Jess as she sits down. You ready to cry your eyes out, J-Babe? He asks her. I bristle. What the fuck is he calling her J-Babe for? That's our thing. I glare at Erickson over Jess's head, but he doesn't seem to notice. Why would I cry? She asks, puzzled. You've never been to a Broken Paws event before? She shakes her head. Oh, man. He reaches into his breast pocket and tugs out a handkerchief. Canning, you're about to experience something petrifying. A room full of grown men crying. Jess glances at me. I thought this was a benefit to raise money for animal shelters. I nod. It is. Then why? Just wait, Erickson warns. Just wait. Our team captain, Luco, echoes from the other side of the table. He's already got his own handkerchief out. Mike feedback screeches through the room and we all turn to see the founder of Broken Paws take the stage. Hello, everyone. I'm Paula Anderson. I shove my fingers in my mouth and let out a deafening whistle. Go, Paula! Erickson shouts, while our D-man, Hewitt, thumps both hands on the table. The 50-year-old redhead laughs into the mic. Hockey players, can't bring them anywhere. The crowd rocks with laughter. With a few exceptions, of course, Paula says with a smile. Because what many of you might not know is that every player on the current roster of this revered Toronto franchise volunteered at one of our animal shelters this past year. It's true. We all have,
though I know some of the guys didn't do it willingly. Like me, Coach Hal is a hardcore dog lover. This is his pet charity, pun intended. And he made every player promise to work at least one shift at a Broken Paws shelter, non-negotiable. But one player in particular has worked so hard and so relentlessly to raise money for our cause. Paula's voice thickens with approval. So I ask all of you to give a big round of applause for Blake Riley, whose tireless fundraising efforts have allowed us to save the lives of 100 more dogs this year than we did last year. He's also made several sizable personal donations that have enabled us to provide veterinary care for the dogs of families with limited means. As applause fills the room, Jess turns to me in amazement. You did all that? I shrug. Dogs are awesome. Her eyes narrow as if she's trying to figure something out. Then she turns back to the speaker. Another girl would probably give me at least a kiss for helping all the pooches, but not Jess. She only raises one lithe, elegant arm to take a sip from her wine glass. She swallows, and I watch her throat work, wishing I could put my lips right there and taste her. Shit. Once upon a time, we were briefly friends with benefits. Now we're just friends at a benefit. And now I'd like you all to turn your attention to the screen, Paula says. And behind her, a huge projection screen slides down. All of you have donated tonight. All of you have donated in the past. I, along with everyone else at Broken Paws, thank you for it. We thank you and we commend you, and we would like you to see where all your money has gone. Oh God, here we go, Erickson moans. The lights dim. The first strains of Angel float out of the speakers, and then the slideshow begins. The first shot is of a scrawny chocolate lab puppy who's missing his right eye. The caption reads, Wally, 4 months, abandoned in a dumpster in Joliet, Quebec. The second shot shows a slightly older Wally, still missing an eye but now happily sitting in the lap of a smiling little girl with pigtails. The caption, 4 surgeries later, Wally's new home with Katie. Luco's wife is the first one to sniffle. Then we have a pic of a Great Dane with 2 broken legs. He's followed by a litter of starving terrier puppies in a cardboard box that was found on the side of the road in northern Ontario, and a husky that was beaten within an inch of his life. With a little gasp, Jess slips her hand into mine. She's trembling, and I look over to see tears sliding down her cheeks. When I check the table around me, I see Jamie give a teary smile to Wes, who discreetly flicks a drop away from the corner of his eye. Ah, there is cute as the fucking dogs. There isn't a dry eye in the room, mine included. This happens every year at this event. I don't know why I keep coming back, except that it's such a fucking amazing cause, and I guess even hockey players could use a good cry every now and then. But Paula wouldn't leave us in this condition. It's bad for business to destroy our donors completely. So the music morphs from Sarah McLachlan to Who Let the Dogs Out? There are pictures of the new grooming facilities in the Ontario shelter, thanks to last quarter's donations. A state-of-the-art operating room at the Quebec location. There are several shots of my teammates and various shelter dogs. And then, the thing closes with a montage featuring yours truly. There's a video of me being swarmed by a litter of Rottweiler puppies. Paula had opened their cage when I wasn't looking, and the 6 of them started jumping all over me, trying to get the sandwich I was eating. The audience cackles as they watch me hold up my sandwich so the puppies lick my face instead. But I'm not done yet. The next 4 photos are of various dogs sticking their noses in my crotch. Beside me, Jess lets out a giggle. The music swells and one last shot fills the big screen. It's me holding a puppy in one hand close to my face. I'd been letting the dog sniff me a little, but the photo was taken in a way that suggests we're sharing a kiss. The sound of 150 female sighs fills the room. Oh my God, Blake, Jess whispers in my ear, and I jolt when her lips brush my cheek.
I'm what?
I ask thickly. She squeezes my hand. You're the best. Her praise makes my heart soar. Damn it, I've got it bad. I'm so fucking fucked.
A rough ride. Jess. Blake is acting weird. Weirder than usual, that is. I don't think I've ever seen him this subdued, but I'm done pestering him about it. If he wants to tell me why he's down, then he will. I can't force him to talk. You want to dance? I ask him. Now that the speeches are done, the music has started up again. Not Hozier, unfortunately. I'm assuming he's already on his private jet, heading somewhere awesome. But the DJ's song selections aren't bad. Jamie is out on the dance floor with Ben Hewitt's wife, Katie, and either I'm wrong, or they're doing the Uma and Travolta dance from Pulp Fiction. They're terrible at it, though, and Wes and Hewitt stand nearby, laughing at their respective spouses.
Nah, Blake answers. Not in the mood.
I put my arms up around his neck, though, hoping I can change his mind. How did you get involved in this charity anyway? Seems like you put in more time than if it was just a team thing. This wins me a shadow of a Blake smile.
I love dogs. Used to have one, a big white boxer. After graduation,
He clears his throat.
Lived with Molly for a while. She took care of him when I had away games, which was all the time, right? So after we broke up, I had to let her keep him. Otherwise, he'd be in the kennel half the time.
Damn it. Blake looks even more blue than he did a couple of minutes ago. Maybe you'll see him again now that she's back in Ontario, I suggest.
Maybe, he half-heartedly agrees. Listen, do you mind if we take off? I'm kind of wiped. Didn't get much sleep last night.
I drop my hands from his shoulders. Hot date, I say lightly. He shakes his head.
Neck.
Huh?
Neck sore, he admits. It was hard to find a good position to sleep in.
I have to bite my tongue to refrain from suggesting a whole bunch of naughty positions that he might find pleasing. I don't know what's wrong with me. My girl parts have been tingling ever since that photographic montage of Blake and all those cute puppies. I guess I'm turned on by philanthropy? Who knew? Or maybe it's just Blake who turns me on. Blake and his big body and easy grins. The man whose magical power is that he's always able to make people laugh. And orgasms. He's good at giving orgasms, too.
Jess.
I snap out of my ode to Blake train of thought. Hmm?
So you're cool if we go?
Yeah, it's fine. I have finals to study for. We're on trimesters, so there's only 10 days until crunch time. Blake and I say our goodbyes, hugging, kissing, and fist bumping with teammates, their dates, and the event organizers. As we leave the ballroom and walk toward the coat check area, he keeps a couple of feet of distance between us, which is unsettling. Normally, he doesn't waste any opportunity to touch me, even if it's just placing his hand on my arm. I wish I knew what was up with him. Loud, brash Blake I can handle. Melancholy Blake? I'm stumped. We reach the coat check counter, only to find a little plastic sign that says, back at 10:15. Seriously? I check the clock on the wall. It's 10:03. Who just leaves their post mid-party? People need their coats, damn it. I suppress a sigh. Awesome. Blake rubs the side of his neck and rotates his head as if trying to stretch it out. Your neck hurting again? I ask in concern.
A bit.
I move closer and brush my hand over his nape. The soft hairs there tickle my palm. Want me to rub it out for you? I wait for the inevitable wisecrack, but it doesn't come. Oh boy, is Blake broken? Maybe he needs his batteries replaced? Leaning up on my tiptoes, I press my mouth to the side of his throat and kiss his warm flesh.
Jesse, what are you doing?
Kissing your boo-boos, I murmur, then trace the tendons of his neck with my lips. Do you want me to stop? My tongue glides over his skin, and his clean, spicy flavor infuses my taste buds. Would you rather we talk about why you've been sulking all night? He groans when my lips encircle his earlobe. I'm not sure where this urge to maul him has come from. It's not like I've been aching for him these past 2 weeks. My school schedule has been so hectic,
that it didn't leave much time to think sexy thoughts about Blake Riley. But now that he's here, standing so close to me, smelling fantastic and looking good enough to eat in his tailored black suit, sexy thoughts are all I'm thinking. Well, I prompt, tilting my head back to meet his eyes, which are now burning with lust.
No, I don't wanna talk.
His voice has gone husky, sending a shiver up my spine. I glance at the clock again. 10:05. Then I shift my gaze to the coat room door. We have 10 minutes, I say meaningfully. You think that's enough time? He winks.
Baby, I'll make you go boom in 3 minutes tops.
I choke down my laughter as he yanks open the door and pulls me inside. Oh, thank God. I fixed him. Blake is back in Blake form, smiling, naughty, and impulsive, his green eyes blazing with heat as he lowers his mouth and kisses me. With our mouths locked in a battle for dominance, we stumble down a row of coat racks toward a private nook in the back of the room. Blake has me up against the wall before I can blink, his tongue slicking over mine, his hands all over me. I gasp when he slips one hand underneath my dress and rubs me over my panties.
So wet,
he croaks, before cupping me fully. I squeeze his package through his trousers and groan. So hard. His choked laughter heats the air.
Okay, so we've established that you're wet and I'm hard. What are we gonna do about it?
I latch my lips to his again and loop my arms around his neck. What, you need me to show you an instructional video?
A sex video starring you?
One long finger dips underneath the crotch of my underwear.
Let's put a pin in that. Right now, I just want...
His finger pushes inside me, and we both moan.
That,
he grunts.
I want that.
That's as much foreplay as I get. Blake produces a condom from his wallet and has his pants down and his dick out before I can blink. Not that I was expecting sweet, lingering kisses and lots of teasing. We're in a coat closet and on a deadline. This is gonna be a quickie, through and through. Blake lifts me up and presses my back against the wall. I hook my legs around his waist, relishing the feel of his warm hands cupping my ass. He angles my body slightly, moves one hand to his erection, and then guides it inside me. Ah! I gasp when he thrusts deep.
Hold on, baby. This is gonna be a rough ride.
Holy shit. He's not kidding. His mouth captures mine in another blistering kiss, and then he's fucking me in fast, shallow strokes. I cling to his shoulders and rock my hips, straining to get closer. The tension in my core gathers, tightens, as pleasure makes my toes curl. I can't catch my breath, because Blake is still kissing me, and his frenzied pace doesn't let up. My piano teacher always said, if you're going to make a mistake, make it good and loud. I'm pretty sure she didn't mean this kind of mistake, but I'm following her advice nonetheless as I moan into Blake's mouth and writhe against his talented body.
Blake. It's been a long time since anything felt so fucking good. I'm drowning in this girl and I don't want to be saved. I keep giving it to her hard and fast, even if what I really crave is a long, slow night of it in my bed. But she's loving it. And I'm the kind of guy who knows not to ruin a good time. Except it's such a good thing that it's ruining me. She's wrapped so tightly around me, I never want it to end. The sweet sounds she's making are almost as good as the clench of her pussy on my cock. Then she sucks on my tongue, and my nuts tighten up faster than a slap shot. Oh, shit, I say between groans. I'm gonna come, Jesse. Like, super fast, like, oh, fuck, like, now. My eyes pop open to see her beautiful features taut with ecstasy, and it's over like Rover. I shoot so hard that my whole body shakes with the force. She moans, long and low, and we tremble together, our mouths locked as tightly as our bodies. Afterward, we just stay there for a moment, panting. But eventually I have to set the poor girl down and disengage. She clings to me still, her arms around my neck. That was... The sentence gets no ending. Indeed, I smooth her skirt down because I don't really want to stop touching her, but we can't be seen like this. Gently, I lean Jess back against the wall and tuck myself hastily together. She seems to wake up to our current situation, her hands straightening her hair. Her big eyes hold mine and it slays me. She wears the most beautiful sex flush on her cheeks and all I can think about is dragging her back to my lair and starting over again. And my neck feels looser all of a sudden. The pain is gone. I want to build an altar to Jess Canning and declare a miracle. But first we have to get out of here. I nudge her gently toward the exit, hoping nobody will notice us sneaking out of the... Jess smacks into Will O'Connor's chest the second she steps out the door. Shit. My least trustworthy teammate smirks at Jess, then arches a brow at me. So, he remarks. Riley, I guess the ass-kicking for hooking up with Wesley's sister doesn't apply to you. He's gonna be fascinated when I tell him about this. I open my mouth to argue, but Jess gets there first. She pokes his chest and scowls at him. This isn't high school, asshat. My brother really doesn't need to hear about every time I do something a little stupid. My mouth slams shut. I wish I could unhear what she just said, but it's already branded into my brain. And the pain it brings freaks me out a little because it's been a long, long time since my gut is clenched like this, since it felt like someone had stabbed me in the heart with a skate. O'Connor's face splits into a grin. Hey, if you're feeling stupid again later, I'm available. The strangled sound I've been holding back breaks free, emerging from my throat like a twisted gasp. Sensing trouble, Jess eases backward until she's pressed against my chest. Her hands find mine, which are clenched into fists. Move along, Will, she says quietly. Nothing to see here. He gives a final smirk and I feel like punching it off his face. Takes all my willpower to let him walk away. When he's gone, Jess lets out a breath. Whew, what an asshole, right? She turns to me with a smile. I try to return it, but it's hard. Because Jess just said in no uncertain terms that fooling around with me was stupid. Whatever I'm feeling for her, it's obvious she's not feeling it back. My good mood has been punctured as quickly and completely as a balloon with a needle. The coat check lady's back, Jess says. Shall we? I take her hand, and then I take her home. But there's no joy in it. Once more with feeling. Blake. The puck comes whizzing toward me. It's a pass from Wesley. I put my stick in position, pluck it out of its trajectory, and snap it into the goal. Or that's what should have happened. For my third time today, I shoot wide, sending the puck into the waiting arms of my scrimmage opponent, Will O'Connor. And that asshole laughs. I don't pay attention to him, though, because I'm glancing at Coach instead. His face goes slack and he shakes his head. I'm so fucking frustrated I could spit. My neck aches, too. The pain radiates down my shoulder, wreaking havoc with my concentration. We position ourselves for another face-off. I catch Wesley watching me with nervous eyes. Then the puck drops and Erickson passes to Wes. I put on a burst of speed as he lines up to send it over to me. Once more with feeling. I get my stick on that puppy and... Lemming steals it with a poke check that I never saw coming. Coach Hal blows the whistle. Let's change a few things up, he says. Wes groans. He knows what's coming. Hal is going to make a line change before our game tomorrow night. God damn it. And then it's worse than I thought because Coach puts Wes with O'Connor, who's a glory hog. Wesley spends the rest of practice looking sour, and when the final whistle blows, I leave the ice so fast there's probably a contrail behind me. I'm in the showers before anyone else has even unlaced his skates. Under the spray, I knead my shoulder while the hot water pelts me. My teammates shuffle in. They leave me alone, but I can feel eyes on my back. So I cut the shower shorter than the ideal length. Eternity, and get dressed. While I'm changing, the head trainer hovers, asking me what's the matter. Is it something we should evaluate? Just a stiff neck, I insist, because it is.
There was nothing really wrong with me except a little pain and the horrible sense of doom that's descending like a dark cloud. I just can't shake the feeling that something is switched off inside me. Last night I lay awake worrying about it. That's so unlike me. It's not even funny. But it's as if my carefully calibrated sensory balance has gone haywire. Last year when I had that sprain, I bounced right back. But this time, my bounce has bounced elsewhere. I hightail it out of there and drive to the one place that will never let me down. The bar, of course. It's only 5 o'clock, and at this hour, Sticks and Stones is empty. The other players will all drift in here eventually, but for now I have the place to myself. Except for Lisa, of course. She hustles over and plunks a mug of beer in front of me. I didn't order yet, I mumble. She shakes her head. The mohawk is green today. I can always tell what my customers need, and what you needed was speed, man. You need a beer like yesterday. That obvious, huh? Good old Lisa. Her smile is patient. What's her name? Who? Lisa gives me an eye roll. Whoever has you twisted up in knots. She must be somebody special because you're never the one who's sitting here with a mopey face. Her name is Jess. I take a big gulp of the beer she's brought me. Wait. Lisa puts her elbows on the bar. She drank the Velvet Fog, right? Probably. She nods like a sage. Nice girl. Not everyone jives with a wheat ale. I'd do her. But I thought you weren't ever dating again after what's her name? Molly. I didn't forget, Blake. I just don't like saying it out loud. Right. Lisa is awfully protective of the players. I never told her what Molly did to me, but during my rookie season, Molly used to come to Sticks and Stones and guard me like a Doberman. She never liked this place, and she used to complain that her beer was served too warm. Now that I think about it, Lisa might be responsible for that. She's back in town, you know, I hear myself say. Damn, Lisa makes a face. I'm sorry. Is she giving you a hard time? Nothing I can't handle. Her face softens. You always say that, honey, and I'm sure it's true. No man is an island, though. You're the kind of guy who takes care of his family, takes care of his friends, takes care of his teammates. But who takes care of you? With another gulp, I consider the question. So you're saying that men are more like peninsulas? Then women are like the busy parts of downtown, all those one-way streets and all that traffic. It's so fucking confusing. Her mouth opens, then closes again. Then she grabs my pint glass off the bar and yanks on a tap, topping it up. Drink this and tell me what you're going to do about the Jess situation. Did she dump you? I shake my head. She said fooling around with me was stupid, or that I was stupid, one of those. Lisa flinches. Oh, honey, maybe she didn't mean it like it came out. Actually, I'm pretty sure she didn't, but then where is she? And how long would it take her to realize that we're good together? Women always want me. The bartender's lips twitch. Most women. Right, I correct. Women who like dick want me. But not Jess? She likes me a little, I admit. But not enough. Seriously, Lise, how could one woman try to trap me and another just considers me her OOPF?
OOPF?
Occasional orgasm-producing friend.
And you want more? She pauses. You're lonely.
Ugh, that word again. Why do people assume I'm lonely?
Okay, stupid question, Lisa warns. Have you actually told this girl you want more?
Yeah. Well, I hinted.
You hinted. How?
I pushed her up against the wall of a coat room and pounded her. You may have a point.
Lisa cackles. Yeah, go figure. So now you need to be straight with her. How's she gonna give you what you want if she doesn't know what that is? Oh, and if you're the kind of guy who likes to make a grand gesture, now would be a good time to do that. You strike me as a grand gesture kind of guy.
I do? Granted, I make some very grand gestures with the Blake Snake. But I'm getting the feeling that Lisa might not be talking about sex right now.
Yeah, you're a go big or go home guy, right? Think of something she really needs, and then give it to her. A girl would have to sit up and notice something like that.
She would, right?
Of course.
I think this through a little more. But if I make a grand gesture, she might still turn me down.
It could happen, Lisa admits, wiping down the bar. But then you'd know how it was.
Fuck. My neck gives a big twinge, and I feel like I already know how it is.
I can't do this. I can't do this. Jess. Rise and shine. The loud and cheery voice jolts me from not-so-peaceful slumber, and before I can blink, the whole world tips over, and I'm slamming down onto the floor. What the hell? I groan and rub my arm where it smacked the hardwood, realizing I'd fallen out of my chair. Was I sleeping at my desk? I groggily scrub both hands over my face. Yep, I totally fell asleep mid-cramming last night. There's a drool spot and a cheek impression on the pages of the textbook that had served as my pillow. Oh my gosh, are you okay? Violet is tugging me to my feet, her eyes wide with concern behind her glasses. I didn't mean to startle you. It's fine, I'm fine. I rub my tired eyes. What time is it? 8:30. I gasp. Are you serious? Crap, crap. Our final exam for pathophysiology and pharmacotherapeutics, two words I never knew existed before I started this nursing program, is in 30 minutes. I don't even have time to shower, damn it. Why didn't you wake me earlier? I ask my roommate. She wrinkles her forehead. I did. You said I'm up, and then kept reading. I did? Great. Some people sleepwalk. I apparently sleep study. Except, oh God, I can't remember a word of that textbook. Same with all the notes I took at the lectures. Panic coats my throat as I struggle to recall even a shred of information from my study sessions. Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. I'm going to fail this final. Violet is oblivious to my internal anxiety attack. You should get dressed, she informs me. No shit. I fly around the room snatching up pieces of clothing, then strip out of yesterday's wrinkled jeans and sweater, while Violet leans against the door, watching me. Are you leaving now, or do you want to wait so we can walk to class together? I can wait, she says graciously. I yank a pair of clean yoga pants up my legs. Ugh, I can't believe I fell asleep in jeans. I have red lines all over my thighs from where the denim dug into my skin all night. You want me to quiz you while you get ready? She asks. If it had come from anyone else, the offer might have been construed as considerate. But there's a hint of smugness in Violet's tone. Sure, we've been getting along better since the icebreaker at Sticks and Stones, but that doesn't change the fact that Violet is super competitive. She crows every time she does better than me on a quiz, gloats whenever our clinical instructors give her any praise, and constantly makes sure to remind me that she's at the top of our class. I'm nowhere near the top. I'm not on the bottom, either. More like middle of the pack, which is a frustrating place to be. I'm killing it in the practical stuff. I secretly do some gloating of my own every time our instructor tells me how wonderful I am with patients. But the academic part is more difficult than I'd expected. Of course, that's the part that Violet excels in, and she never lets me forget it. Thanks, but I'm good, I answer, as I slip into a V-neck t-shirt. I don't like to go over the material right before a test. It clouds up my brain. She shrugs. Cool. I don't need any last-minute prep either. I had that textbook memorized before school even started. Of course she did. I duck into the common bathroom on our floor, Violet trailing behind me. After some hurried teeth and hair brushing, I shove a stick of deodorant underneath my shirt and swipe it over my underarms, then zip up my toiletry case. 5 minutes later, Violet and I have grabbed coffees from the stand in our lobby and are making our way across campus. My insides churn with every step I take. I'm so fucking nervous, and chugging half a cup of coffee on an empty stomach isn't helping to ease those nerves.
The way this program is set up, most of our courses are on a pass-fail basis. This one is the exception. A score of 70% or higher is required in order to pass the course. This is the grade they'll be checking when they review the status of my scholarship. The good thing is, I've already passed all my other classes, so this is my last final. But I can't afford to do poorly this morning. I have to kick this final's ass. So what's the deal with you and Blake Riley? Did you break up? Violet's curious question jerks me out of my panic spiral. What? No. I mean, we weren't going out in the first place. But you went to that charity thing with him last week. There were pictures all over the internet of the two of you dancing. Were there? In all honesty, I've been in a study bubble for the past 10 days. Blake hasn't even crossed my mind. Nobody has. In fact, last night I got a text from Jamie that simply said, "You alive?" I messaged back, "Studying, leave me alone." And that's pretty much the only contact I've had with the outside world since the broken pause benefit. "You of all people should know that I've been married to my desk this week," I remind Violet. "I haven't had time to see anyone." "Yeah, but he hasn't texted you at all," she points out. "Before the charity party, he was texting you all the time." I furrow my brow because, one, she's been monitoring my text messages, and two, she's right. It's been a while since Blake sent me one of his randomly absurd texts, or his deliciously filthy sexts. Is he avoiding me? Maybe he's mad at me? Why would he be, though? Our on-and-off friends-with-benefits arrangement has suited us both. Besides, Blake is incapable of being mad at someone. He's the man who lets his evil, lying ex consort with his poor, unsuspecting family because he doesn't want to tarnish her reputation.